Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that's playing games about a beach so that we can pretend that the snow isn't falling from the sky. I'm your host for this episode, David Lloyd, and yes, we are now entering the winter months as Halloween has now passed us by and is in the rearview mirror. It's that time of year when the snow begins to fall, and the arguments about the game of the year really start to percolate. But before we get into those debates, we have a new season of Diablo 4 to talk about, as well as a pair of games that I've finally been able to get off my backlog. Escaping the cold by going back to the hottest place in the fictional world, it's Jordan Rudick.
So I think when we did the Diablo 4 episode, Casey and I, around the time when it came out, we kind of were looking forward and thinking, okay, yeah, we'll probably drop in for the seasonal gameplay that was coming. And I didn't play really at all the season one stuff that came out maybe a couple months ago. But this second season, kind of saw the announcement for it. It's vampire themed, so I got a couple of my group members back together, and we started diving into it. So probably put about 10-ish hours in so far, and yeah, really digging it. So I'm looking forward to chatting about that. How are things with you, David? What's going on?
Going all right. Got about 5 or 6 games on the go, and I still haven't recovered from the Baldur's Gate 3 focus. I've been kind of bouncing off a bunch of games. I think I ended up finishing Kingdom Hearts, and then I've currently got like partway of a playthrough of Trails into Reverie, finished Danganronpa 1, working on number 2, which we'll talk about today. I got a couple of small like indies that I'm playing. I'm all over the place. I'm scatterbrained.
I mean, I kind of feel that way too. I don't normally like being pulled in so many directions, but I've got multiple review games. I've got Mario Wonder, which I just kind of wrapped up the other day. We're going to be talking about that on a upcoming episode of The Thirsty Mage, so we'll save that for then. I've installed Spider-Man 2. I haven't even played it yet because I've been playing Diablo 4. I was playing Dark Souls 2 on my PS5 as well, because Casey and I are going to do an episode on that one to follow up on the first game that we talked about a few weeks ago. So yeah, like you, I'm kind of being pushed and pulled in a lot of different directions. Not so much backlog stuff, but more, I guess, a mix of more recent games and then review games. So, and I don't love it. I don't love having all these things on the go. I don't feel super comfortable when I'm there, but it's good. You know, it's that kind of getting close to Black Friday, holiday season type of environment that we're in right now. So it's almost par for the course. We kind of just get into so many different things around the November timeframe. So it's all good.
Yeah, and then not to date the recording, but today is the release date of the Star Ocean Second Story as well.
So that's right. Yes.
I've got my finger over the buy button on that one too.
If you want to, I will play it. Even though, I mean, we didn't love the first one. I know we kind of fell off that one a little bit. This one's just, it's so good looking, that might be enough to push me through. I mean, there are games
reviewing well too.
Yeah, it's reviewing very well. I played a demo at PAX, and I don't know, even if the combat doesn't completely work for me, I think the game is so, the art and the visuals are just so striking that I think that might be enough to compel me through. So yeah, I'm down to talk about that game as well in a few weeks or something.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, especially I was looking at the things I'm going to be buying, and it's kind of sparse between now and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so... you know, previously I was thinking I'd save my money for something else, but since there's not too many games for me on the horizon, I'll probably end up dropping money on that one.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting closer to the end of like the big release season. I think there's something in December, I think, that I can't quite put my finger on. Mario RPG obviously is coming in a couple of weeks, which I'm definitely picking up. I think previews just started dropping for that game as well. But yeah, it is a good time for clearing backlogs and getting into maybe returning to some games, like kind of what we're doing here. So yeah, I mean, I'm happy to kick it off with Diablo 4 season 2 impressions if we want to do that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so Diablo 4, so really got into it. I think I never got a character to level 100, but I did finish the story, and I did, you know, do a bunch of the multiplayer, single player, all that kind of stuff. I think I, looking back, my main character was a sorceress, got her to about level 57, 58. So a little bit into Nightmare, which is kind of world tier 3, which you kind of do after, it's a little bit of the post game part, I suppose. In the season 2, which is called Season of Blood, revolves around vampires. And the new mechanic is you kind of gain these vampiric powers. So there's a new kind of rotating event that happens on the map where a section of the world is shaded in green. And there you're fighting these more vampire focused enemies. There's different kind of materials and things you can collect to give you more experience and to also, again, acquire these new vampiric powers, which are accessed from the inventory. And then upgrade those powers as well. And these are kind of they're simple kind of perks, like reducing your ultimate abilities cooldown, you know, getting more health regen from doing damage, or maybe even summoning familiars based on certain attacks or doing poison damage and stuff like that. So they're just more ways to buff and to improve your character to kind of tailor how you're playing the game a little bit. So I started a rogue character for this one. I hadn't tried the rogue before. I had made a sorceress. And then for season 1, I had tried out a necromancer as well. And then so rogue first time through, I think about level 43 or so right now. So almost getting to that level 50 threshold where you stop gaining ability points and you start gaining paragon levels. And then so you're kind of just gaining basic buffs to your stats at that point. Which I think is a little less compelling than gaining the ability points, but I kind of understand how it works. I think there's 7 chapters to complete in Season of Blood. I like the way that the season content is divided into these chapters. I think they did this with Diablo 3 as well. I don't really remember how that seasonal content worked exactly, but I think it's something similar, where each of the chapters of the seasonal gameplay has its own objective. So for example, in chapter 1, let's say there's 12 objectives. You don't need to complete all of them, which is kind of nice. So you might have to only complete 9 or 10 out of 12. So you can skip a couple of the ones that maybe aren't as interesting to you or don't jive with how you like to play the game. But it might be things like, you know, clear out 1 stronghold or complete 2 dungeons or upgrade your healing potion or craft a certain item or maybe upgrade a certain a piece of weapon, a weapon or an armor or something like that. So you can get through the chapters fairly quickly. We just completed chapter 3 last night, so moving into chapter 4. So about halfway through the seasonal content. But because I haven't hit Nightmare tier yet, I see that chapter 4 is kind of really revolving around Nightmare objectives. So I guess that'll be my group's next endeavor is to get to Nightmare difficulty so we can start doing some of the chapter 4 objectives. In terms of story, like there isn't, I don't think there's a ton. Like you get a little bit at the end of each chapter, you'll get like a new kind of story mission or a little bit of a story beat that kind of is supposed to propel you to, I guess, you know, complete the rest of that chapter. And so you can get to the end of all the chapters and the end of the seasonal content. For those who are kind of doing endgame stuff, like, you know, level 90 plus, my understanding is there are new kind of legendaries and new things that I just haven't got to or haven't experienced yet. I'm not super interested in all that. I don't know that I'm going to be playing this game at a level 90 plus and worrying about, you know, upgrading my gear to the nth degree. I'm kind of like, I would like to get a character to level 100 at some point, almost just for the achievement. Because I'm playing on PlayStation, right? But other than that, like I don't really care about the end game grind too much. Like the level 100 thing and beating like the Uber or the Uber Lilith kind of final boss. Like I would like to do that again, tied to an achievement. So those are two things I'd like to do. So maybe I will get into that end game grind a little bit just for accomplishing those things. But I'm also kind of happy just to finish the 7 chapters of the seasonal content as long as it stays interesting. The thing about Diablo 4 is like the gameplay, it is really, really good. Like getting back into it was pretty easy just because the rolling a new character and kind of going through the motions of like improving your gear, going back to town, salvaging stuff, using the materials to upgrade your new stuff, going back out, finding that kind of familiar ping sound that happens when a legendary item drops. It's really satisfying. Like that loop still works for me. It just can't be something I'm doing like week to week, you know, on a day-to-day basis, like dropping in and out for 10 to 20 hours of seasonal content every 3 or 4 months. Like that sounds like something I would like to do as long as I do find the new season premise interesting. And I think a vampire one is one that's like that. The world does feel a little bit different as well. Like there are obviously parts of it that I hadn't explored in going through the main story of the game. So I feel like I'm seeing new areas in the southwest, in particular the desert kind of regions that I hadn't been to before. It does feel like there are new strongholds or ones I just never experienced. At any rate, it's new to me, right? So that's kind of the name of the game. Like if you only put in a level 50 or level 60 character, it's entirely possible that there are corners of this world you haven't been to before, like me. So for that reason, I'm happy to go back in. Like I feel like I'm seeing new things. The last night we did the world boss. I think it's Ashana or something like that. It's like a poison kind of dragon. And we lost by like, it had like maybe 5% health left. It was very brutal. Man. And it turns out that was one of the chapter 4 objectives. I didn't realize that. And maybe I couldn't unlock it while I was still in chapter 3 when we were fighting the boss. But it's good to know that we are going to have to try that one again. The problem is you go to that world boss, and I think if the people that join you are a lower level and not doing a lot of damage, but they do make the boss harder to fight, like they boost its health or its damage, it kind of sinks your chances. So I think that's one of the things that we had working against us. But still, yeah, really fun. Kind of 10 or 12 hours here we've put in. I've already kind of scheduled more sessions of the game. I've been playing 2 or 3 person co-op, two of us most of the time. And then there's a few hours where I was just playing solo, trying to unlock some new abilities for my rogue. In terms of kind of comparing that class to the sorceress, I like the mobility. I feel like I am able to move around a little bit more, backflips and stuff like that. I've kind of focused on putting poison damage down and using poison traps. So when enemies are in my poison, they are taking a lot of damage, and then I'm kind of stacking damage on top of that. Rogue definitely feels like a character. And again, this is just the way that I've built it out so far. I feel like I'm a lot better or more capable of taking out mobs of enemies as opposed to single targets. So against bosses, maybe not putting out as much damage, but able to mow down mobs pretty quickly. So I might respec at some point. When get to level 50, and at that point maybe want to re-roll the skills and try a different rogue build. But I am using a bow and arrow or crossbow. I do feel like that kind of range thing is what I was hoping to do. Reminds me of playing those kind of ranged characters in the first 3 Diablo games too. David, I know you didn't play any Diablo 4, but I don't know if you've come across any thoughts or any writings about season 2 or know if people still playing it, still kind of getting into it. What have you come across there?
No, I was actually surprised. Like when I was thinking about it, like it doesn't seem like it's as in the universe. Like I don't hear people talking about playing it in general.
Yeah.
Like I'm wondering if it's not getting the same. Like, this is all anecdotal for me, like, whatever I see on social media and stuff. But I don't see people, like, I'm still seeing Baldur's Gate 3 talk and a lot of Mario Wonder stuff. But the Diablo 4 stuff, I haven't seen it all lately. Like, the seasons are 60 days, right?
It might be more than that, actually. I was going to say 3 or 4 months. You might be right. It might be 60 days. Because the fact that we're on the second season and the game came out in the summertime, you might be right. Season 2... Yeah, before how long? I don't know if it's exactly 60 days. It might be 82 days. Yeah, so it's going to end in January, it looks like. So yeah, I don't know that they're going to be a set number of days. It might be like just depending on between season 2 and 3, there might be like a lull, like maybe a month or so before they start the next season. I don't know if it's going to be right away, go back into the next one, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to keep to a schedule like that, obviously, especially if they want to introduce new stuff. So
based on what you've like you said, you played a bit of season 1, you're playing a lot more season 2. Like, are you going? I'm assuming it costs money to.
No, it's free. These are free updates, right? So that's not the reason why I find it compelling. Like you can get the battle pass and unlock more cosmetics and stuff like that. But you do unlock a little bit of stuff just with the free battle pass, I guess. I don't even care about any of that stuff, though. I don't care about the battle pass. I don't care about the paid or the free cosmetics. I'm not really caring about the cosmetics at all. Like, it's just not me. Again, I know some people are into that stuff. You know, good for you. That's cool. It's there. But I'm happy just going and playing the free content as much as I can. I hope that I can get through season two without spending money. It remains to be seen. Maybe I get to chapter 7 and I have to get the battle pass to finish it. I doubt that, but stranger things. I do see myself kind of going back to this every once in a while, leading up to something that Casey and I mentioned when we first talked about the game. Eventually this will get an expansion, right? Eventually there will be an expansion to Diablo 4 that will include a new character, probably either a new map or a new section of this world opening up, something like that. You can see the way the world map is designed, you can see that there is space, you know, around this continent where they could put another region or something like that. So that would be another reason to get me back in. But I'm kind of happy that I went digital for this game, because I knew this is how I was going to play it. I knew that it would be kind of drop in, drop out. I did that a little bit with 3, even though it was across different platforms. Diablo 2, obviously, went back to that game so many times. Even in the last few years, played a little bit of Diablo 2, just kind of on a lark, getting ready for Diablo 4, getting excited about Diablo 4, I suppose. So, yeah. Season 2, I think an interesting one. I do think that if people haven't been playing Diablo 4, I think it's worth going in and taking a look. I like the kind of checklist style objectives for the season chapters. Again, you're not getting a huge dose of story from any of this, but the game, given having a reason to get into that gameplay again and roll a new character, I do think all of that is compelling. And we'll see if it's able to keep my attention after level 50, which is kind of where I started to drop off with my sorceress character at the beginning when we first started playing the game. So, yeah, I asked you about if you'd seen people talking about it. And I think this is, of all the years for a game like this to come out where you want it to have a long tail and you want people to talk about new seasonal content.
Yeah, it's a bad year.
It's a bad year for it, right? Because it really is just an incredible year of releases. Like, if this had come out, like Animal Crossing did, kind of heart of the pandemic, right? Which was perfect, like lightning in a bottle for Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. Imagine Diablo 4 comes out at that time and everyone's playing online because we can't get together in person, and maybe it just explodes and people are talking about Diablo 4 all over the place for months and months, kind of like what we were doing with Animal Crossing New Horizons on Switch. Maybe it's a different story, but this year just so jam-packed with not just good games, but excellent, wonderful, potentially like game of the year titles. Like it's tough. It's just tough for a game like this to kind of stay in the public eye, I think, even with compelling seasonal content, maybe.
Yeah, well, even like Casey, who has always been like the person I look to when I think of like Diablo hardcore, and I don't think he's played any of season 2 from our chats. I'm pretty sure he's just hasn't gotten around to it because he's got so much, just so many other games.
I think he would play 1 and 2. And again, you do feel a little bit of that burnout when you put so many hours into a game like this at the beginning. Like, yeah. I remember that the first month, the first like 3 or 4 weeks of Diablo 4, like everyone I knew was playing it. They were playing, looked like 5 to 8 hours a day. Like, it was crazy. Like, playing it like it was a job, and I mentioned, literally I have a friend working on this game or who has worked on this game. And so I think there was some of that burnout that kind of transitions to, I need to move away from this for a while. And you move away from it to all these really, really compelling video games. And then it's that much harder to go back. Right. So yeah, but still, at the end of the day, I'm happy to have gone back. I'm excited about continuing to play a little bit more. And I will continue to check in on the seasonal content, I think. And whenever the expansion does come out, I don't know that it'll be next year. If it is, maybe the end of next year, more likely 2025. But I'll definitely be checking that out as well.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll depend on the user. Well, I guess there's a few things, because they would have that whole Microsoft takeover
Yep, that's going to factor in for sure.
May or
yep.
may not delay things. Then you also have, like, if people are really starting to fall off, like if people playing are falling off a cliff, then they might need to rush it out to bring eyes back to the game or whatever. Like,
or tweak it, like make it like a pseudo sequel almost, right? I think sometimes you can think of an expansion as doing that, kind of like what's happened with Cyberpunk, right? With Cyberpunk, the expansion they came out with, which I haven't tried, I am interested to try it at some point, maybe if I can grab it on sale. That did feel like a chance to, like almost like a Realm Reborn with Final Fantasy 14, right? Like a chance to kind of reboot things, restart things. Not that Diablo 4 needed that necessarily. I mean, it reviewed well and people enjoyed it from the beginning. It's just there were so many other things to draw their attention. And that's no fault of the game. That's just a symptom of 2023 just being kind of crazy for releases.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if they can find a good timing for a media expansion, you know, maybe at a time when we're getting to the end of a console generation, where, you know, at that point the releases become sparse as people kind of save things for the next generation, whether that's, you know, 2025, 2026, something like that. An expansion kind of dropped in at the right moment in between the, you know, big releases could hit pretty well for them and get a whole flock of people back into Diablo 4. So we'll see. You know, that's all future stuff. We were kind of just speculating here. We don't know about that, but I am excited to see what these upcoming seasons bring. And I think the season 2 stuff is pretty fun so far. So
cool.
Yeah. How about you, David? Well,
yeah, so I've been playing, and I guess I'll preface this whole discussion with I think we'll end up, there probably will be Danganronpa 1 spoilers. This is Trigger Happy Havoc, because I've finished playing through that, and we'll probably, it's kind of hard to not talk about it without some spoilers for the first one. But we will get into the second one afterwards, and There won't be spoilers for that one. I'm about halfway through that one, so I couldn't spoil it if I tried. But yeah, we'll start with the first, talk a little bit about how the second is a bit different, but that one will be the spoiler free one. So yeah, so Danganronpa, I think most people who are probably listening have played it. It's kind of like a mix between Ace Attorney and the Hunger Games, I guess, in the sense of it begins with a story of, I'm going to put an asterisk on the 16 students are trapped in a school, told that they have to live the rest of their lives within the school by the headmaster, or the self-proclaimed headmaster of the school, Monokuma. So even if you've never played Danganronpa, you probably know or seen this bear where it's like, you know, a good white bear on one side and the evil black bear on the other side. And yeah, he's basically told them that they either have to live there forever, or they have to kill one of their classmates and get away with the murder. And if you manage to do that, then you get to leave the school and kind of live your life, and everyone else has to be executed. But if you're caught, then you're also executed. And then the students keep on going until there's nobody left. So the whole kind of premise at the beginning of the game, the premise behind it is kind of a mystery. Like, none of them know why they're there. None of them understand what's going on. They're all just kind of, trying to get along. Nobody obviously wants to kill anyone else. But then the Monokuma, who starts to get bored, begins putting out like motives for reasons why they should kill each other. And yeah, like it's an interesting story. Like the way that the gameplay works is that you're playing kind of like an open world, I guess, to a certain extent. You're in first person. You're kind of walking around. You're playing as the ultimate lucky. I think you know this at the beginning of the game. You're the ultimate lucky student because you want to draw to get into this prestigious school. So you're with all these different prodigies, I guess. And that's one of the other things, is that each student is good at something specific, and that's the reason they were at the school to begin with. And so there's like a section of you walking around and developing relationships with the other students. So there's, you know, you can, at the beginning of the game, there's only one floor that you can explore, but you can kind of walk around and look at things and see your surroundings. There's a bit of lore or story that you can kind of look at, and then you talk with the students, and then eventually gets to the point where there's a murder, and that's when the kind of Ace Attorney gameplay kicks in the sense that you have to investigate the murder and you gather up clues. And then there's a class trial at the end where all the students gather in a circle and they kind of just debate the details of the case. And the students have to figure out who the murderer is, so that they can figure it out. I guess it's almost like Among Us to a certain degree as well, where the students have to figure out who it was and use the evidence to point it out. So, I mean, the game overall, I enjoyed. The trials, maybe the weaker part of the game in my eyes. The trial is kind of like a series of mini games to a certain extent, where like all of the evidence that you collected are these bullets that you will then use to contradict people when they've said something that's a lie. So the students will all have this conversation and then there will be statements that'll be made that'll be highlighted in yellow, and you have to shoot them with bullets, the ones that are lies, or to kind of move forward. And then there's a hangman's game where you have to pick the letters to write out the clue. And then there's a rhythm game when you're debating one student specifically, and then it kind of scales up as each trial goes by. So, I mean, part of the thing, too, is that, like, there's these explanations of these games almost every single trial, because they'll explain, like, how the minigames works in the first trial, and then they're like, and now we've added this for this. And so I'm, like, reading through instructions every trial.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then everything ends with this. You have to make this comic or manga of what exactly happened in the murder. So you have to so it'll show like this comic strip, and then there's like these sections that have been taken out, and you kind of have to place them in order to show like, okay, this person did this, 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 and this, and this is what led to the murder. And then there's a pretty funny execution at the end of each trial, once you've kind of determined it. So there's no, like with visual novels, like sometimes you kind of get these winding paths of like, oh, you got the bad ending, you got to go back. Like there's none of that. Like there's no way to miss clues. There's no way to pick the wrong person. Like it's a very scripted, and it's all like in place. Like you basically it's a linear story. There's no way to fall off the path. Like you either pass the trial or you don't.
I mean, you mentioned the trials maybe not being a high point for you. I think some people do like them, and that's fine. Like they're there, and I think they, I like how they kind of do change up a little bit throughout the story. One thing I don't like about them is that if you just don't really get what's happening, or if you're just, maybe you're trying to figure out who did it, who was the murderer, and you just can't, it's possible to kind of fail enough that you have to redo a bunch of stuff, right? Like you have like a life, like you have like a life bar kind of thing, sort of like an Ace Attorney, right? Where if you fail, or you put the wrong things together, or you make the wrong accusation or whatever, it takes damage off of you. Stop me if I'm wrong, David. Because it has been a long time since I played these games. And then once you lose all your life, you might have to go to the beginning of the trial or something like that, and have to redo everything, which I think is kind of punitive and counterproductive. Like I get you want to have like tension associated with the game, but having to redo parts of it just isn't very fun. I know I've played through all three of the Danganronpa games. There's an action kind of spinoff. I haven't played that one, but the main games, 1, 2, and then V3, I have played all three of those, all on Vita, actually. I did find that part a little bit frustrating, where like if you, for whatever reason, there's one case you just, you know, you'd feel like you don't really know who did it, or you're not able to kind of put the pieces together. And then getting into that fail state can be frustrating. But I really like the interactions with your class, kind of like classmates, like your fellow prisoners, I guess, whatever you want to call them. I like the, you can kind of spend like relationship points or bonding points to go and interact with them. I think those are really funny. They range from like funny to like heartwarming to kind of like weird, like and awkward. Like I think those are all entertaining, though. I think that's my favorite part of the Danganronpa games, is when you have free time and you're not like specifically advancing the story or doing a trial, but you're just kind of like walking around, like encountering people and spending some time with them. And you don't go on a date necessarily, but you go and do an activity with them, or you just hang out with them and have a conversation or something like that. I think that's my favorite part of these games in particular. I don't know if that's the same for you.
Yeah, I would say the characters are what make the game interesting, I guess, at the end of the day. Like, so when you build relationships, you get more of their backstory, or you learn, I guess, not so much backstory because their memories are gone, but you at least like learn about their personality. And I guess they do. It's only like the last 2 years that they've lost, like their time in the school have been taken away. A lot of this game, you kind of have to put reality aside to a certain extent. There's a lot of things that happen where it's like, okay, this isn't very realistic, but you just kind of have to set that aside. But there, I mean, then they give you benefits for building those relationships if when you get to a certain point with each person, you gain an ability in the trial. So it could be that you get extra health, or you get I'm trying to think of some of them. I know one was like you get extra bullets in the rhythm game or something like that, or you can there's one, it gets to the point where there's like fake words that come up that you have to kind of shoot out of the way to get to the real thing to move it. So you get like extra bullets for that, and extra time.
Can you like freeze time a little, or slow down time a little bit as well? Is that an ability? Maybe you can augment that one too.
Yeah, it was funny because I went through the first trial and I got this achievement where it was like, oh, you did. I can't remember. It was like, didn't slow it down time or something. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. Didn't even know that was a thing.
I didn't even realize. Yeah. I was getting antsy in those, in all those descriptions where it's like going on and on about the instructions. I'm like, just get to the trial.
Yeah, of course.
So I probably just skipped it. But yeah, it's enjoyable that way.
One thing that's funny is like you get all these items, I think, and I don't really know exactly how they work, or they're supposed to be like gifts for certain people. And I've had a hard time figuring out exactly which gift to give to which person. And I know there are other games that kind of do that. You know, I think Fire Emblem has something like that. Persona, obviously. Yeah, there are a lot of kind of RPG style games, maybe, or maybe visual novel types as well. I guess I should say even farming games or kind of simulation games where you are, you know, trying to find the right person to give the right object to. And I wish I was either better at that, or that maybe there were more clues about what a person liked. Like maybe you read a bio or you unlock a profile for them and it says, oh, they like the color blue, so you give them something blue or something. But I often felt like I was maybe giving the wrong thing to people and maybe not earning a lot of points with them or scoring a lot of points with them.
Yeah, I felt like they did a little bit of that, because I know, trying to remember the character, there was one character, she was in the first game where she was a swimmer, and she had made mention of like loving donuts, and I know like there was one of the treasures was a donut.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, that's clearly like one of hers, which it ended up being. But even the purchasing of presents is kind of weird, because... So at the end of the trial, you're given like Monokuma coins, and then you go to the, there's like a convenience store in the school that you go to, and there's like a gacha machine, I guess, where you put in coins, and then a prize comes out. But each time you get a prize, what happens is that the percentage of getting a duplicate rises. So if you put more coins in for like one turn, it lowers the percentage. So it's like this risk reward of like, okay, you're at like 30 or 40% likelihood of getting a duplicate. Do you use up more coins to drop it down to 20, or do you just like keep going? Or I kind of wish too, because you get like 100 coins. It's like, well, I'm not going to sit here and turn this thing 100 times. Like, I wish there was some kind of like quick feature where it's like, here, you know, I want to give you 20, but I only want to give you like one per turn. Like, just do 20 turns so I'm not hitting the button every single time.
Yeah, I think I remember doing that a little bit just to get like a trophy. I think if you got a certain percentage of like those collectibles or whatever the trinkets, you would get a trophy. So I remember using all my coins maybe at the end of a playthrough or starting a new game plus or something like that, and just like, okay, I'll go through this as much and just try to get some of the trophies. And you might get one for like getting all the different ones or something, which I might have missed out on, but. Yeah, I do remember that gacha machine. And I think a system like that kind of persists in the second game as well. There's something, a mechanic like that as well.
Yeah, it was more, that one was confusing because, again, I probably skipped something I should have read, but there's, so the second game is like, there, it's an island that you're on, and there was a convenience store on the island. So I was going there, and there's, it's more of a vending machine. So it's like, there's items where it's like, these are the one coin items. These are the 50 coin items. So I was going there and buying stuff, but then I didn't realize that there was a, I eventually found it early enough, thank goodness, but there's, palm tree that has a Monokuma face on it, and you put money into the face and then the capsules fall from the tree.
I don't remember this at all. That's so good though. I love that.
So and it works the same way. It's like the more coins you put in, the lower likelihood you get of a duplicate.
Yeah, same idea.
But yeah, I was like wasting coins in this vending machine thinking like, why is there only like 20? Because I could see like you see that there's like 100 different presents you could potentially have, but they're all question marks. I'm like, well, there's not 100 in the vending machine. How am I supposed to get the other 80? Like, and then that's when I found this tree on the beach.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about characters. Like, are there certain characters that you've really gravitated towards, or kind of maybe they stuck out for you for being a little bit more memorable? From, we could do the first game first and the second. I'm just looking at the main characters in the first game.
Yeah, so I mean, the one that stood out most for me was Kyoko.
Yeah.
So here's where the spoilers are gonna hit because Kyoko didn't really give out her, like, in the beginning she's kind of a mystery, like she doesn't really say what her background is or what her skill was or whatever, but she always seems to be helping like my character Makoto.
Yeah,
the lucky student, and then eventually you find out that her ultimate skill is being a detective. She's from this like long line of detectives, and which makes sense because she's the one that keeps on doing like the autopsies at the beginning and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like comparing the first game and the second game, like the first game characters feel more memorable. Like they feel more. I don't know if memorable is the thing, but I felt closer to the first characters. Like maybe this is just because I'm not completely through the second game yet, but the first characters seemed, I don't know. They seem more interesting, I guess. Like, you know, there was always like the give and take with like Byakuya, who was the prodigy. Like he always, like if, at the beginning he was very, you know, let's work together. And then eventually he's like, oh, I'm going to do my own thing. And he was kind of like screwing around to make things more interesting. Cause he was like, well, this is, you know, this is too boring to work out like this or whatever. And the character. So now the character in the second game, that's kind of doing that kind of role as Nagito.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But he's like, Nagito is more like a Joker character, like he's just a loon who's trying he was just trying to cause chaos, where Byakuya, I think, was like trying to play the game. Like, yeah, I think he eventually wanted to murder someone to get out, but was waiting for his opportunity or whatever, you know.
I think that the funny thing about playing these games is that because they're so similar from 1 to 2 to 3, it's almost like your first experience with this series, it's going to be like, that's the one that's going to stick with you maybe a little bit more, right? Because you're like, oh, second one was just like the first one. Third one was really similar to the second one. And so the first characters that you meet in this style of game, like those are the ones that are maybe going to jump off the page a little bit more for you. I'm kind of looking at the profiles for the characters in the first game, and I'm kind of remembering them. And I like Sakura, the ultimate martial artist. I liked her. Like I think that just kind of, the way that they are maybe not what you expect, or some of them are like incredibly what you expect, you know, like Hifumi, the ultimate fanfic creator, like a big guy, glasses, like he's obviously like, you know, a little bit of a, he's obviously a nerd, and he, you know, likes his manga, and he likes, you know, his scantily clad girls, and he's kind of maybe hitting on some of the girls there, the cuter ones, and like it's just like they're stereotypes, but then some of them break those stereotypes, and that's kind of fun too, right? Kind of seeing how they maybe diverge from what you're expecting from them. I like the voice. I think the voice works good. I think especially Monokuma, yeah. Like he kind of makes the games, you know, like he's like the heart of them, even though he's like a jerk. Like whenever he shows up, you know, something interesting is going to happen, right? Like he's kind of drives the whole plot forward, and he's you love to hate him, but you also kind of want to see what he's going to do next too, right? Like, he's a really compelling antagonist in the game, I guess.
Strong comedic relief. Like, he's both sadistic and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, you can't hate him, because I mean, I guess that's you look at his design, right? The half white bear, the half black bear, with the smile on two sides, but one's diabolical and one is kind of like, you know, unassuming. You do get both sides of that character, and so yeah, he's great, like a great kind of like mascot for the series as well. I'm glad that they kind of chose to bring this character forward through the three games. And I know the second game introduces a foil for him, I suppose, but even their interactions are great too, right? Monami, who we were talking about just before we started recording. It's funny that kind of adding another bear who goes against what he's trying to do. Like, their dynamic is especially comedic, I think.
Yeah. A very brother and sister. Like, he jokes about her being the little sister.
He does. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you get that relationship, and then yeah, he's always like, well, when you first see like Monokuma, like, shoots her with like a Gatling gun,
that's right,
so you
that's
think
right.
She's dead, and then the next day she's just back and fine. And
so that he's constantly like threatening her or killing her or punishing her. Yeah. And then she just comes back like, oh, you know, it's nothing, like, oh, it's just Monokuma, yeah, like, well, please don't hurt me. But then yeah, he's gonna keep doing the things that he does. So I think the fact that he doesn't really change, like, he kind of stays the same throughout, even though some of the characters might change or have realizations, Monokuma is kind of just the same throughout, and that consistency is entertaining too.
So I'm interested to see what happens. So again, here, this is a pretty big spoiler that I'm about to drop now. The first game, we find out that Monokuma is not like a thing itself. He's actually like one of the students that's killing everyone. Like, the whole time we find out that this other student that's been hiding in the building the entire time. Nobody knew she was there or whatever. She's Monokuma, basically. And then ends up, that's like the final person that you have to end up facing, like the final boss, I guess you can say, to a certain extent. So technically, like, the Monokuma has in the second game has the same personality and the same hilarity and everything. But technically the person it was should be dead.
Yeah, right.
So it'd be interesting to see, you know, what happens along that effect.
And I'm sure, like, between among the three games, I'm sure there's this continuity, and like, you know, how does the story play out across three different titles? And I can't really think of that. All I think about is that the experience of playing each of these games has been an enjoyable one. I played them all on Vita. I know they did get re-released on PlayStation in some compilations form, and then they're on Switch as well, which is nice. So I assume you played them on Steam Deck, David.
Yep. Yeah. That's where I played the first one, I think, pretty much all on Steam Deck, and the second one I've kind of split between my PC and Steam Deck.
Yeah, I remember, you know, picking these games up on Vita. I downloaded the first two, and then I ended up getting the third one physical from GameStop, and probably one of the only physical games I ever got from my Vita. So that was kind of memorable too. But yeah, I'm glad that these games were more accessible. My wife actually played them on Vita as well, and it does feel like, I'm glad you're kind of bringing this up, because it is making me kind of itch for a little bit for a playthrough again of them, at least the first game, just kind of remember that. But
it's funny, it's 13 years old now, like, that's
it's kind of crazy, right? Like, they felt like these were games where it'd be like, oh, okay, this is a reason to get a Vita, like, you know, Persona 4 Golden was kind of that. I felt like these games as well were like, you get a Vita because these are the games you play on Vita once you get one, right? Like, they were kind of trapped there for a little bit, I guess. And again, nice to see them released everywhere, but I can't remember when it was, August, I think, when I was playing Master Detective Archives Raincode and kind of thinking about just how similar that game is to these, and now kind of talking about this one again, or these kind of two or three games again, it is making me remember that I do really like these, and I think I like them better than Raincode for sure. But it was kind of funny to see that be like a spiritual successor to the series. I'm sure people wanted to see more Danganronpa games. So you do get a fair bit of that in Raincode.
So Danganronpa S must be the one that must be the one that you haven't played then, I guess, eh? The Ultimate Summer Camp?
So there's two. There's an action game called, like, Ultra Despair Girls or something like that, or Ultimate Despair Girls. I don't know. It's a spinoff. It's like a, not a first-person shooter, but like, I don't even know how you would classify it. I'm trying to look on the website here if I can see if I can find a name for it. But it's not like a visual novel style game like the main entries. The S1, I think, is like a board game kind of style.
Yeah, reading it says it's a spin-off installment of of Danganronpa, which is an extended version of two side modes of Danganronpa V3 killing.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there was a board game in V3. And then Ultimate Summer Camp is that board game extended out. I think that's how that one works. So I don't really remember the board game too much of V3. It wasn't something that stood out to me. Maybe it's good. I don't know. And then Ultimate Summer Camp just kind of builds on that, I think.
But
and then Ultra Despair Girls is a totally different game. That's not. I mean, it might feature some of the same characters or environments, but it's an action game. It's a shooting game.
Yeah, like 2017 was the last true Danganronpa.
Yeah, V3, yeah.
And then this S was in 2022.
But yeah, it came out along with the bundle when they all came to different platforms, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the team has kind of moved on to other things. Like, I remember there was a game that I swear was the Danganronpa people that had made, and I was excited for it, and it ended up being, it was like, I think
Danganronpa and Ushiku. World's End Club.
Yeah.
I reviewed it. I gave it like a 4 or 5. It's terrible. Like, it's not like, good at all.
I don't know what they were thinking with that one.
It's not like Danganronpa at all. I don't get it. Like, I can see why they kind of pivoted really hard to Raincode, which I think is some of the same game makers. Raincode is very similar to Danganronpa with the trials and everything. It's super similar, even a Monokuma style character. But World End Club was nothing like Danganronpa, other than having like students kind of trapped in a game, so to speak.
For
right?
The first like hour, and that was it. Like that.
Yeah,
I thought the first hour of the game, which I think they even had a demo for.
There's a demo, and it's just the first hour. Yeah,
and that's what I thought. And then after that, it was just like a really crappy platform.
Yeah, I don't even. It's so unmemorable. But yeah, there's just nothing to it. Like, it's got, again, it has some of the, like, oh, there's something sinister happening behind the scenes, but the gameplay just isn't really compelling at all. Like,
and
reaching the end of that story and even the character relationships, all that stuff, it just nothing, it doesn't hold a candle at all to any of the Danganronpa games. So that was too bad. I wonder what happened there with that game, how they thought that was going to be appealing to Danganronpa fans. It was like Danganronpa for babies or something like that, like and worse than that maybe. So yeah, that was too bad. So the game I've been mentioning, Danganronpa, another episode, Ultra Despair Girls, it is an action adventure video game, but again, I think it features like kind of first person type shooting. I'm just kind of looking at the Steam page here. Almost like a Galgun type of perspective, I think, if people know that series. So it seems to be reviewed somewhat well, but again, I wouldn't go into it expecting like a Danganronpa type game. Maybe it's a similar environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it'd be interesting to see, because I mean, Spike Chunsoft, like you said, Raincode, I guess, would be the latest of this, because like, you had the Danganronpas, but then you had like the 999.
Yep, those
series
were good too.
And stuff. Like, we haven't seen one of those in forever.
Yeah, it'd be great to go back. Obviously, like the 3DS and the DS kind of lent themselves really well to those types of games. Although I know they came to other places eventually as well, but you got to figure out how to take those games from touchscreen devices to non-touchscreen devices. And I think we're going to see that with the next Professor Layton game that's coming, right? Which I think we're going to hear about this month, actually. We might see more details, maybe even a release window for that game too, where they're, again, you're finding ways to take these born portable series, and then how do you make them work on home consoles or a hybrid like the Switch, something like that. Yeah. Like the Etrian Odyssey games, right? Like, I think they came over and they're fine, but I think the translation is a little bit mixed. So I'll be curious to see, you know, some of those more of those puzzle kind of adventure visual novel style games, how those would work. Mm. One more thing I wanted to say about Raincode got ended up getting a lot of DLC, actually. I got DLC for like all the kind of main characters in the game. So we got 4 episodes of DLC. I haven't played that. I don't know if I will. But there is, again, if for someone who's played Danganronpa and wants more of that, Rain Code is a pretty decent option, and there is a lot of DLC for it too.
Yeah, I would pick it up. I'm hoping that it'll end up on Steam. I'm not 100% sure why it was a Switch exclusive.
It's odd to be Switch only. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it only sold the 300,000 copies, so hopefully.
And again, you think about where Danganronpa started, right, on Vita. And I know, we don't have a Vita. And
no.
the PlayStation Portable, or not Portable, Portal is a far cry from being another Vita.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you could call it Portable.
No. But I mean, Steam Deck would seem a great fit for Rain Code. So it wouldn't surprise me if it comes to Steam next year for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that. Did you have any final thoughts for... I had one question to end the... end it with, but I thought just if there's anything Danganronpa left that you wanted to...
Yeah, no, just that hearing you talk about it and kind of being reminded of the characters and their interactions, I do love that. I would like to maybe play the first game on a, you know, playing it on the Vita, you know, it's quite small, you know, it's not the best place to play like super long games like this. So maybe, you know, playing on an OLED Switch or playing a little bit on a TV or something like that would be nice. So if the games go on sale, which I know they will at some point, I might end up picking at least picking up one of them or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they go on sale quite like I picked up the first Danganronpa on a sale a while ago, and then I picked up 2 and 3. What's funny is that on Steam, like, they're in a bundle. So because I bought the first one, I was able to buy the bundle, which just happened to be on sale again.
Oh, right.
Pick up 2 and 3. So it was like, I think I paid like $10 for the first one and then $15 for the other two.
Yeah, that's a good deal. That's a good deal for sure.
Yeah. So that worked out for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm going to be playing 3 anytime soon, but at least I'll have it.
I think 3 is considered weaker than the other two. So I think you're playing the 2 better games, and then 3 is a little bit of a departure. I think it does some kind of funky stuff narrative wise. So you'll be leaving the series for a little while after having played the best ones. And then, you know, when you get that itch, you can come back to 3.
Yeah. So the question I was going to ask you to kind of finalize the wrap up the episode was, I'd mentioned this as Ace Attorney, and this that Ace Attorney, there's like that vibe that you get in the Danganronpa with the trials.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been playing a lot of Ace Attorney with my daughter, but I was curious if you've played The Great Ace Attorney.
So I bought it recently on sale, like I'd say within the last month or two, but I haven't played either of those. So I have the 2 parts like as a bundle. I might have even bought the Ace Attorney trilogy again on Switch just to have it in another place, because I love those games, and I do you know, yearn to go back to them kind of periodically. But I do, yeah, I will be playing the Great Ace Attorney at some point. My wife has it on her Switch as well, and so just kind of, again, that feels like a good holiday game for me, getting into that one once the review season kind of dies down a little bit. So yeah, I would love to get into those games. I haven't played. I've heard awesome things about Great Ace Attorney, so I am excited to play those games, and I do have them ready to go.
Okay, you have to let me know then, because I own it, and my daughter started it because she loves Ace Attorney. Like, she's played all the games, all the Phoenix Wright games, and has watched the Phoenix Wright anime at least 3 times now, if not 4 times.
Right, yes,
on Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
But she could not get into The Great Ace Attorney.
Okay, interesting.
So
we'll
see.
Again, for fans of the series, I think they've obviously had been waiting a long time for that game to be localized, and so... for it to finally make its way over and to be a pretty good port from all that I've seen, I am very excited to play those games. I don't think I'm particularly good at them. I prefer the Professor Layton games myself, but Ace Attorney is something I do want to play. I want to play those new games for sure. So we'll do that. We'll do that maybe sometime in December for maybe like an early January kind of episode or something.
Yeah, sounds good.
Right on. I was thinking whether I should do this today or next week's episode, where we're planning to talk about Mario Wonder, just so people know. Casey, Paige, and I have all rolled credits on Wonder. I don't know how much of the kind of post-game or completionist aspects Casey and Paige have done, but I've done like 99%, basically, just one thing to do. I wasn't sure if I was going to do that for this episode or next one, kind of talk about something, but I do have a book coming out. So consider this the book. And this is the first place I'm mentioning it anywhere. I'm going to be kind of posting on social media about it next week. But for, you know, patrons of Thirsty Mage, like, you are getting the absolute first announcement or first, you know, bit of news here about a book that I have coming out. So book coming out on the plan is November 14th. Hopefully that won't shift. It's a Tuesday. I have a digital ebook version of my book. It's called A Game in the Life. It's kind of an extension of the Timeless Game series I was doing for Nintendo World Report. And one of the Timeless Games entries that I did for the Thirsty Mage on Final Fantasy VI, if you watched that video. It includes more games that I haven't talked about earlier, and then kind of extended stories about my life and intersections with these games as well. So I hope you'll look forward to the social media posts, kind of sharing parts of the book and kind of getting everybody ready for it, and then the launch on the 14th. So yeah, I'll just announce that here. Thank you. Thank you, David. I'm excited about it. It's the first time I'm kind of publishing a book in any way. So I'm self-publishing this one. It'll be available, again, ebook format, kind of available everywhere, including Amazon. Hopefully it'll go smoothly. Again, this is my first time doing this, so we'll see how it goes. But if people want to hop on board or ask me questions about it, I'm eager to chat about those on social media. So stay tuned for kind of some update posts on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. More to come soon.
Cool.
Yeah. But that'll do us for this episode of the Thirsty Mage. Thanks for listening to us ramble on about Diablo 4's seasonal content, Season 2, getting into that, and David's experiences with the first two Danganronpa games, getting me excited about maybe returning to one of those in the near future. And we've got, Super Mario Wonder impressions coming up soon. One day we will get to the long-promised Death Stranding episode. Again, just too many
games. We're going to have to, because I'm going to forget what happened.
I know. You're going to have to go back a little bit or something like that.
You have to watch a video and remind me of
that. That's it.
Yeah. The dread of trying to avoid the BTs.
That's right. Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then an episode on Dark Souls 2, probably in the next couple of weeks as well. Again, Casey's playing through that, and I dip my toes back in that water too. But thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon on the Thirsty Mage. Bye for now.
Bye.